Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. So every now and then, I will interview someone who's really just for me. And I know you guys are going to enjoy this, especially my motorcycle enthusiast friends out there. But a few years ago, I've always known who Ewan McGregor was. And a few years ago, he did this mini-series where he and a buddy named Charlie Borman, who is with me right now, basically went around the world on motorcycles. And I fell in love with it. And my son was, I don't know, pretty young at the time, a teenager. And it was something that we did together. And we've watched each and every one of them. And now Charlie has his own series. He's doing these tours and stuff. And I had the idea the other day, we're just brainstorming, me and Andrew, who could we interview? And I'm like, I don't know if you can get him, but Charlie Borman would be great. So he joins me now from the UK. Charlie, I apologize for geeking out. This is one of those interviews where people, I'll meet people at a grocery store. I've been doing radio for 20 years. They'll say, oh my God, Dave, I feel like I know you. I feel like we're friends. That's how I feel about you, because I've gone around the world with you and Ewan.
Oh, well, that's very kind. That is that's fantastic. It's lovely to be able to geek out with you.
So, Charlie, my first love was a $60 mini bike, as we call them here in the States, which is basically a lawnmower engine on a little frame with a seat when I was 10 years old. And since then, I've owned Triumphs and BMWs and the whole thing, and nothing will ever, ever match the excitement of that crappy little bike I got when I was 10. What was your first two-wheeled love?
Oh, well, listen, I know that bike very well. And I think it's funny how I don't know how I got into motorbikes. My father wasn't into motorbikes, and he was into horses and stuff like that. So I rode a little bit of horses, but I think somehow it's in your soul, a motorcycle, and it comes out, and you just are drawn to it, I suppose, is how I think about the bikes. But my first bike was someone had left a little monkey bike in Dad's barn, and my great friend Jason Connery, who's Sean Connery's son, because my father made a movie. My father's a film director, and he made movies like Deliverance and Excalibur and Hope and Glory and loads of movies. And he made it from a very strange film called Zardos with Sean. And anyway, so he was in Ireland, and Jason came over to visit him, and he heard that there was this little monkey bike in the garage or in the barn, and it wasn't working. So Jason got it out, and I was only about 6 years old, I suppose, or seven, and he made me push him. I can't know for how long, and anyway, we finally got the little monkey bike going, And Jason, of course, rode off, and I had to wait for ages to have my go. And eventually I got my go. And I was coming up by the – because we lived in the middle of the countryside in the Wicklow Mountains in Ireland. And I came up the drive, and they were standing on the grass. And I rode the motorbike past my father thinking I was, you know, I was amazing. And just as I drove past him, he reached down and he grabbed me by the hair and he pulled me off the motorbike. Right? And I'm dangling there, you know, livid with anger. And I'm looking at him in fury. And then I look at the motorbike, and the motorbike goes straight into a barbed wire fence.
Charlie, oh my gosh.
That was my first thought of a motorbike.
Not only are we basically the same age, same generation, but I have a story so similar to that. So the way I got my mini bike back in 1974, whatever it was, is I lied to my parents and said that I'd been riding for about a year and I was really good at it. Truth was, I'd never even sat on a bike. So my dad bought me this bike. All my friends gathered in the front yard. I hit the gas. I went straight into my house, which was like a white siding, flipped over the bars, hit my face. I looked like the Joker. And my dad made me just walk the mini bike around the yard with my friends watching without rubbing it off my face for about an hour. So we had very similar first rides.
That is hilarious. That is funny. I mean, it's amazing the rubbish you'll say, you know, to get a motorbike. I mean, it's just extraordinary. But it's funny, isn't it, how... You know, even though that moment, I mean, and I remember when I was a couple of years later, I remember a friend of mine in the village. We lived very, very remotely in Ireland, but the friend of mine in the village, a guy called Tommy Rochford, he had a Mako 400, which at the time that was the bomb, that bike.
Yeah.
I think it was a German or Dutch, I think. I can't remember now. But it was an amazing motorcycle, and then I convinced him to give me a go, and I couldn't touch the pedals, so he let me have a go, put it in the first gear, and he pushed me off, and I rode around the field until I fell off. And you know, like you falling off, that was it, hooked forever.
Yeah,
you know, I nothing else I can really think about, really, other than motorbikes.
So if you guys are just tuning in, I'm talking to Charlie Borman, who is partners with Ewan McGregor. They do these Long Way Round, Long Way Down miniseries, which if you haven't watched them, even if you're not a motorcyclist, if you're into travel at all, if you like Anthony Bourdain or any of those shows, you're going to love this. Charlie, my son and I, as I said, would watch these and really just fell in love with the both of you because you're both very famous people and you've done very well in your lives. But when you're out on the road, you're just guys, and you're driving through parts of the world where they don't even know who you are, so you're really just guys, and I just think that's the charm and the fun of the whole show.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I grew up in the film industry, you know, always on the film sets with my dad's films, and he always put me in his movies, and you know, he said, why pay for child actors when I've got four children who can work for free?
Yeah.
So I sort of grew up in that, and then I had quite a lot of success as an actor, and then you know, with a film called The Emerald Forest and a bunch of other films and stuff, and then my career kind of was slowly disappearing because I kept choosing movies that were fantastic locations but really scripts, and so you know, I'd be on a plane thinking I'm off to Africa, you know, fantastic, but the script is terrible.
Yeah.
You know, and anyway. And then Ewan was sort of starting to become very famous. And then we met on a movie set together, a film called The Serpent's Kiss, which was my big comeback movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was Pete Postlethwaite, Greta Scacchi, Richard E. Grant, Ewan McGregor, and myself. And I thought, fantastic, you know, I'm back. Anyway, that film went straight to DVD. and I don't think anyone even watched it on DVD. but I met Ewan, and we both had this love of motorcycles. And we ran motorcycle race teams together. We had some success in the British Superbike Series and stuff like that. And we just did everything. We used to do track days together where you take your motorcycle on the racetrack and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then eventually one day we just decided that we wanted to do a little bit more, you know, and I think we did Long Way Round, which was the first one. You know, first we were just going to ride down to southern Spain and meet our wives there with their children. Yeah. And then come back. And I remember one day you rang me up and said, Charlie, I've got this idea. You've got to come over to the house. So I came over to that and he had a map of the world and he said, look, he said, if we're going to, you know, forget Spain, let's go to China, because that's where his wife was brought up. Her parents were university professors or something working there. So, and then we thought, well, if we're going to go to China, we may as well carry on to the Far East Russia. And then we thought, well, if we get to Far East Russia, Magadan, and then, Alaska is not very far away, so we may as well go there. And then New York. And so that's kind of how the whole thing started. So going from London to New York, you know, on the most land possible.
So it's, again, we're talking to Charlie Borman here from Long Way Down, Long Way Around. He has lots of projects going in now. We'll talk about those in just a second. One of the things, Charlie, is I've done the minimal amount of that kind of riding. You inspired me to go buy a BMW GS, and I rode that for a couple of years. But I've never done anything like what you guys do. What strikes me as much or more than the joy is the absolute misery. When you guys are like in the rain at night and you've got 3 hours left to get to a hotel or the middle of a desert, like, I really think I might just drop the bike and say, pull out the sat phone, I'm done. This is it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, there was plenty of times. You know, I mean, one time on the first trip that we did, and we went from London to New York, and went from, you know, Eastern Europe, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, Siberia, Far East Russia, Alaska, Canada, and then finally into New York. And I remember when we were getting into Mongolia, you know, Mongolia is almost the size of Europe. And you know, there isn't really any tarmac roads. There's no signposts. There's just tracks. You can, and at the time, the GPS was quite basic at the time. This was back in 2004. And it had the towns on it, but no roads. But there weren't really any roads anyway. Anyway, so we kind of got through to the middle of Mongolia, and it was beating us. You know, the roads, the rain, the mud, it was slippery, it was dangerous. You know, and we sat there at one stage and we looked at each other and we thought, we just got to get out of here. This is just too much. Anyway, so we got the map out and we were looking at the map, but it was 3 days or maybe more to get to any tarmac. So we were kind of stuck anyway. And I remember you and saying, but whose idea was this anyway? And I looked at him and I said, ours. So, but luckily, you know, when you get to those kind of bits, the whole big journey kind of, it becomes overwhelming, you know, and you can't fathom it. And I remember someone saying to me once, Charlie, just don't think, if it gets really bad, just don't think of the whole thing. Just think of where you're going to get to in an hour, or can you just see something ahead of you? And anyway, we kind of did that. And then we carried on, and really, I'm so grateful that we carried on, because, you know, not only was all that, you know, those challenges of riding and in really remote places and stuff, but it's just the people that you meet. You know, I remember being in the middle of Mongolia, and we stopped. I think we camped like sort of 18 days in a row or something.
Yeah.
And we stayed, you know, almost every time you'd stop, you know, you stop, and then sort of half an hour later or something, once you put the tents up, somebody would just arrive on a horse or someone would stop in a car and they'd get out, and you'd be defensive, thinking, well, what do they want? And then you realize that they're just sitting there thinking, what are you doing here and who are you? And we had these big motorcycles with all this motorcycle gear. We looked like sort of two spacemen from Mars or something landing on Earth. You know, it was brilliant. And then you'd have these amazing conversations with people, even though you couldn't speak the language, you would have these little conversations, and we would carry these, you know, those little mini bottles of whiskey that you get on planes and stuff. And so, you know, we always had, you know, a handful of those in the panniers. And so you sit down and you would share them out, and, you know, you would have an experience.
And it's so, it's such humanity, because I know that the two of you, Charlie Borman and Ewan McGregor, are both very well-to-do. I'm sure Ewan's rich as can be. But out there, no one cares. And these very poor people sometimes are giving you everything they have. And you can see the emotion for you and Ewan. You try to give them cash, they won't take it. It really does just sort of make you feel a little bit better about your fellow man.
I think it does. And I think, you know, I think at the moment, politics is quite toxic and poisonous at the moment, isn't it? And I think, amen. I think, you know, I mean, we look at Boris over here, who's had more parties during lockdown than most of us have had in our lives.
Yeah.
And Trump over in the States and stuff and Brexit, it's made it really kind of toxic. And then you look at what's happening in Russia, and you look at what's happening around the world, you know, and you can be quite doubtful about humanity. But
yeah,
but like you said, when you're traveling overland or traveling in other countries, in you know, in Russia or Mongolia or you know, somewhere in Africa.
So just to reestablish, you're talking to Charlie Borman here. Charlie is an actor, and I want to get into all the things you're doing, but I just keep talking about motorcycles. So to bring me up today, tell me about your current projects, both on air and off the air with bikes.
Yeah, well, we're always looking maybe to do another one with Ewan. I think we both would love to at some point. I mean, so that's going there. Then I do a lot of work with Harley Davidson at the moment, so I'm kind of fiddling around, messing around with them. And then I'm off at the end of the year, I hope, to do these motorcycle tours from Cape Town to Victoria Falls. It looks like fingers crossed, if we're fully vaccinated, we can get out there and have some fun. And we have people from all over the world coming on the trips, and that's a lot of fun. And then obviously on my Instagram and Twitter, there's all sorts of silly things going on all the time.
And how do people find your social media, Charlie?
Yeah, well, it's on Instagram. It's Charlie Borman on Instagram and on Twitter, and then Facebook, and then I've got a small website, charlieborman.com. So come and have a look, and or go on to the Long Way one as well and have a look at there. It's all around.
Well, from a fellow motorcyclist and someone from your generation, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and thank you so much for the entertainment. It's really meant a lot to me and my son over the years.
Oh, well, listen, I'm very glad. What's your son's name?
His name is Nick.
Nick, well, hey Nick, and maybe we'll catch up with each other down the road one day on the bikes.
Love it. All the best to your family. Thank you, Charlie.
All right. Okay, take care now. Thanks.
Right. Cheers.
Bye then.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on Camo X. Hope you enjoyed that interview. So I would have to have a really, really, really good reason to go after Taylor Swift, just because, like, she's got a lot of backup. And I know who the gorillas are. I kind of know who this guy is a little bit who went after her. I understand the point he's making, but damn, did he walk into it.
Yeah, Damon Albarn. He is with the gorillas and Blur, and I've always really liked him. But he was doing an interview with the Los Angeles Times, and he did this really frustrating thing where he claimed that Taylor Swift doesn't write her own music, which is just not true. And then he's like, I like Billie Eilish instead, which felt stupid because they don't make similar music in any way. It felt really random to compare them other than they're both young women.
Well, that's pretty clearly all he was
doing. Right. It was just kind of like, man, just be cool. What are you doing? So Taylor being Taylor, you don't win against Taylor. Even when Kanye and Kim won against Taylor, they didn't win. It came out later that they still lost.
Yeah.
Taylor comes out and she's like, this is so crazy because I was always a big fan of yours and I 100% write my own songs. This is a lie. By the way, I wrote this tweet all by myself, going full Taylor girl boss mode, which is just something that she's gotten really good at. And even though it can get annoying, like, she's really good at it. Don't go after her. Just leave her alone. And then all these producers that work with Taylor Swift have come out and said, yep, she writes all of her own songs. Not sure where you're coming from, dude. So he's come back and apologized and said, oh, they were just using that as clickbait. But I don't know. I saw the whole context in the interview.
Yeah, I think what happened. So I had a local think tank reach out to me in the past couple weeks, and they wanted to talk to a media person. And it was all completely private. You know, it was like, look, you are our guest. You're talking to us, completely private. And I was extremely honest, like so honest that I wouldn't want that interview published. Like I wouldn't get canceled or anything, but I was very open and honest about our industry. And I felt like that's what he did. Like, he just got out over his skis. He was feeling himself and he was getting into the weeds.
Yeah.
And
I sympathize with him as somebody, you guys have known me for a long time, as somebody who has put his foot in his mouth on
Taylor
many occasions and said stupid things without, you know, researching them well enough or whatever. I think it's pretty clear what he did is he reached into his brain of what's a name, and he grabbed the first pop star he could think of, the biggest one, Taylor Swift. And, you know, instead of going after, because a lot of young pop stars don't write their own music, he accidentally went with the one that does write her own music and chose to make that the focal point of his argument.
The way, and I don't know much about any of the people we're talking about, but I know a little bit about music. And when he was saying, like, well, she's co-writing, You mean like Lennon McCartney? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone in the world who even knows her name thinks that she's desperate to bring in someone else to help her write because she can't write songs.
And anybody who knows who she is knows that she writes her own music.
Yeah, you don't have that number of hits and that level of success having other people write your songs.
Yeah.
It's just, it was silly of him. And of course, Taylor's Taylor. So now people are talking about him more than they have in the past 20 years, I'm sure.
But we talked earlier.
She knows how to clap back, so.
We talked earlier in the show about how Biden and Ducey handled all that. It would be nice to see these guys handle it. Like, he apologized. I don't know what Taylor Swift's going to do. But it'd be nice just for the temperature of the planet if she just said, like, apology accepted.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.